Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijone gosha othya, nijone gosha othya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Yeah. from the drum Dakota Travelers off their ABBA record CD entitled Live at Perry Island. That song was a victory dance from the Little Bighorn Battle. We American Indians refer to this fight as the Battle of the Greasy Grass. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in June of 1876, there was an armed engagement between U.S. Cavalry and Northern Plains Indians near the Little Bighorn River in what is now called Montana. The infamous 7th Cavalry, under the command of George Armstrong Custer, attacked and were defeated by Lakota and Cheyenne warriors. I featured that song in honor of today's program guest, Lakota Hardin. Lakota Hardin is a very fine Native American activist, community organizer, and poet. She lectures at many colleges, conducting workshops on racism, sexism, and other social justice issues. It is an honor to have Lakota visiting Florida Gulf Coast University today, presenting a workshop on cultural and racial equality. She is here at FGCU at the invitation of the Multicultural Student Services Office. As a lecturer and curriculum advisor at Florida Gulf Coast University, I also at times have the pleasure to work with the Multicultural Students Office. Each semester, they co-sponsor my Native American film and discussion series I host on campus. Lakota Hardin's dedication for protecting Mother Earth, tribal culture, and Indian rights has made her a role model for many Native people, including myself. She and I share many similar concerns. As I just said, protecting Mother Earth, tribal culture, and Indian rights. One very special thing we have in common is hosting a Native radio program. Lakota co-hosts a weekly KPFA-FM broadcast entitled Bay Native Circle. It is an excellent San Francisco Bay Area American Indian Community radio show. I listen to Bay Native Circle online and recommend everyone to listen as well. As a way of welcoming Lakota Hardin to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, I will now play Bay Native Circle's opening theme.
It's been over 200 years since the gold was discovered here. It was against the law at that time to be Indian.
Liable to destroy our own rivers and meadows. The same man that put us on reserves and ghettos. The same man that's on those dirty dollar bills that you praise. The same white collar ballers that be treating you like slaves.
Tell Great Spirit, grandfather, grandmother, thank you for this beautiful red day you've given us, and thank you for our lives. Good day, my relatives, and welcome to Bay Native Circle here on KPFA 94.1 and KFCF 88.1 in Fresno and online at kpfa.org.
Voices of Bay Native Circle co-hosts Janine Antoine, Ross Kadee, and Lakota Hardin. Welcome, Lakota, to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Amitakuyapi, Lakota Hardin Imachiapi, na Tashina Skawi. I am from the Minikoju and Ho-Chunk Nations, also Ihatua on my grandmother's side. My people are from the Chesapa, the Black Hills region of this continent, also known as South Dakota. And I currently live in the Bay Area of California, been there for about 20 years. I'm a grandmother, I have 7 grandkids. I also am the daughter of Ia Skawi, who is the daughter of Faith Feather, who is the daughter of Twinkle Star, who is the daughter of Agnes, who is the daughter of Flaming Cloud, who is the daughter of War Eagle. And on my grandmother's side, we come from the Ihatua, which is kind of near Sioux City, the area there by the Missouri River, and that's where my family is.
Lakota, in today's program introduction, I mentioned that you lecture at many schools throughout America on various aspects of respecting each other's cultures, human rights, and social justice, all important concerns to Yacht Kadishi Native Center. This morning you did a workshop, which also featured the film Follow Me Home. That movie explores race and identity in America. Your presentation and that film were very special. Would you please talk about your workshop here at Florida Gulf Coast University?
Well, about 20 years ago, I was a student at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I had only really lived in Alaska and South Dakota. My father had lived in Utah, so I spent some time there. But I was really raised in the kind of cowboy and Indian mentality, and I spent a lot of years feeling the fight, you know, being raised in the American Indian movement and wanting to fight for our people and for our rights and for our history and just to be recognized and acknowledged and to have the injustice be overturned. What I did in growing up in AIM and working with my people and then working in the system, because in the beginning we were not in the system. We didn't accept any government funding. We had nothing to do with this government in our school called the Okiksuyokte, which means we will remember, a survival school. So being raised that way and being a spokesperson for Dakota AIM and then eventually Women of All Red Nations and then eventually the International Indian Treaty Council also, I had a lot of education, a lot of information about who we are coming from that lineage that I introduced myself with all the way back to my Grandma Aggie and Flaming Cloud and War Eagle and knowing that all of this popped up around us. And so I was really puzzled by why people act the way they do, meaning the dominant culture. At the same time, after I had my daughter, she was born in 1980, I had to make a living, had to figure out how to feed her and take care of her. And so then I joined the system, the bureaucracy, and I started working as a counselor in schools and taking on those establishment jobs. And what I found there was people there versus AIM, kind of two different populations. And there was a very different way of thinking, you know, for in AIM we had the traditional way of praying and being. And then, of course, in the establishment, what we referred to were people that they wanted to imitate white people. They wanted to assimilate. And this was back again, like I said, early on in the late 70s, early 80s. And so, that you know, I had to cross that bridge. And what I found, it in no matter where Indian people were, lived, whatever background, whether they were in law school or whatever background, reservation, that there was one thing that was the same, and that was the colonization effects, the poverty effects, generations of genocide, that no matter where we cropped up and popped up and built ourselves up to, the bitter shame, the deep, deep sorrow was the same. Didn't matter. We could mask it any way we wanted. And for me, at the time, I didn't have a name for it. And at the University of Nebraska, there was a Women of Color conference in Iowa, of all places. And I went to that, and there was a woman named Ricky Sherover Marcusa who did a racism workshop. And for the first time in my life, after 30 years of feeling angry and feeling hurt and feeling betrayed and everything else, it was the first time I realized there's a whole system in place that did this to me personally, that my person was developed from this fight. And the internalized oppression was the first time I heard that term. The internalized oppression, which was making decisions for me, not my true self. And so it made sense, and I wanted to learn more about it, and I ended up applying to the University of California, Berkeley, and moved to California, and she was going to be my mentor and teach me. And unfortunately, she, soon after I moved there, she died of cancer. That was also another path for me. I've helped several women in my life make that transition because of cancer since then. It really set me on a path, and my goal was to help our people overcome and decolonize our minds, basically what it comes down to. So I've been doing these diversity trainings because in that process of realizing this, one of the teachings that I had when I was a child in boarding school, I did go through the torture and the brutality and the isolation of being in the institutionalized settings of boarding school. I went to Marty Mission and then also went to Chamberlain St. Joseph's in South Dakota. But one of the things that I found in that process was my grandmother, my great-grandmother Twinkle Star, used to come and get me on some of the weekends. And my great-great-grandmother Aggie was 97 when I was 7. And we had no central heating. We just had a wood stove. So when I would stay with them, I would sleep with Grandma Aggie because it would get really cold at night and I was chubby and warm. You know, we would sleep together and she would tell me stories and talk about what her childhood was like and how her world was. And I remember just saying, let's go there, you know, because here I'm being tortured in boarding school by nuns and priests and having to go back every Sunday night. And just remembering this world where she would say, and she would say, you know, the white man is only temporary. But what she meant was this society is only temporary. You know, this is just, it came, we knew it was coming, like the stars, but that it's temporary. And that we would come back to a place and a time when we could be free again. And so in my mind, as a child, I've always held that out. And in that boarding school experience, I remember one of these days, I won't go into the story as detailed, but there was a situation and everybody was screaming and crying and scared. And I looked up at the moon. And right then, at the age of 7, I felt and knew the moon was telling me that as a woman, as a female, she said, I have a lot to teach you. Don't worry, things are going to be okay. And I held that up. So between my grandmother and that interaction with the moon, I realized that there was more to my life. So I've always held that out. And when I went to my first New Bridges camp in California, Ricky Shover Marcusa invited me to California, and there was all the backgrounds of people, African American, Arab American, Jewish American, Latino, Native, white, European American. We were all there. There were gay and lesbian people, people with disabilities, people currently regarded as able-bodied, you know, all backgrounds. And we did this training, and that was my first experience with the diversity workshop. And then we did a camp. We were being trained to do a camp. So there was about 40 staff people and 120 high school students of all these backgrounds. And it was the summer of 1987. So here was this camp of 160 people of all different backgrounds, a week long of looking at this, at these issues and how it affected us and the oppression and the internalized oppression. And at the end of that camp, a week of peace, a week of everyone counting, a week of everyone mattering, every voice being heard, everyone being cared for, it brought me back to being 7 and my great-grandma Aggie and that world she talked about where everybody was cared for. I saw it. I realized she wasn't talking about just Indian people were just returning and only Indians being. It wasn't about blood. It wasn't about genes. It was about humanness and who we were as human beings. And in all of our languages, our traditional languages, our words for ourselves meant human being. Yes. And that's what I realized. I got to experience that world for a week with these people and of every background. And everybody was cared for. And I thought, this is it. This is what my grandmother was talking, my great-great-grandmother was talking about. And I knew that's what I was meant to do. And so that's part of what I do. There's not a lot of request for it. So I'm really grateful to Florida Gulf Coast University for bringing me. And even though it was just 2 hours of our time, I think we did a lot of work in that few hours to help people remember their original path, which is basically that we are human. And all of the diversity means anybody who's not you. So no matter who we are, we're diverse from each other. And at the same time, we all have that same humanity, that same need, the same gifts, you know, in our hearts that we were born with. I think people walked out of the workshop feeling a connection with that and providing them some tools about listening and making connections and alliances to be able to work together to further that way of thinking.
We are hidden, oh, we are gone, now we are here.
Music from singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah off her Silverwave record CD entitled Matriarch. The name of that beautiful song was She Teaches. That title, She Teaches, is a good description of today's program guest, Lakota Hardin. Lakota Hardin is a very fine Native American activist, community organizer, poet, mother and grandmother. Lakota lectures at many colleges speaking on culture, race, gender, and social justice. Lakota is here today at Florida Gulf Coast University presenting a workshop on cultural diversity and screening the film Follow Me Home. FGCU's Multicultural Students Office, which invited Lakota to speak, also co-sponsors a Native film and discussion series I host each semester here on campus. It is a very special honor for me to have Lakota as my guest on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Her concern and dedication to protecting Mother Earth for the culture and rights of Indigenous peoples and for social and economic justice has inspired many people, including myself. Lakota and I also have in common that we both host Native radio programs. She is a co-host of KPFA's Bay Native Circle. I listen each week online to this fine San Francisco Bay Area community radio show. I highly recommend that our Wolf Mountain Radio listeners listen online to their broadcast every Wednesday at www.kpfa.org. Lakota, protecting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, as we say in my Wabanaki language, Kanawha-Tokwisin, all of our relations, is a central concern of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Since the beginning of the rape and plunder of tribal homelands, Native peoples have tried to defend what in English is called nature or the environment. We have tried to warn society of the consequences of destroying what we consider as sacred lands and waters. Organizations such as the International Indian Treaty Council and the Indigenous Environmental Network that you and I have worked with, among others, have presented many declarations at various forums dealing with biodiversity, climate change, and so-called development. The International Indian Treaty Council statement to the World Conservation Strategy, the Carioca statement at UNCED's Rio Earth Summit, the Kimberley statement at the UN WSSD World Summit on Sustainable Development, Indigenous Peoples submissions to the International Convention on Biological Diversity, Indigenous Peoples presentations to the UN Environment Program, and declarations from the annual UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Peoples are some of the important examples. Most Native nations throughout the world are victims of environmental injustices, especially from the exploitation of tribal lands for agriculture, energy, and natural resources. The desecration of your homeland's sacred Pahasapa, the Black Hills, is a very painful example. I know you have fought to defend Pahasapa through the Black Hills Alliance. You may like to know that Wolf Mountain Radio often reports on this issue. One important example is my 9-program interview series with our Lakota friend Charmaine Whiteface, which are on our archives. Lakota, would you please share your thoughts about protecting Mother Earth?
Well, just the day before I flew out here, there's a film called Rally to Protect Bear Butte, and that Mitchell Zephyr and Mark St. Pierre and several other people put together, and it was being featured at the American Indian Film Festival in San Francisco. It talked about the biker bar that's being built there, but it also focused on the sacred sites, and also in California, you know, with the San Francisco Peaks in Arizona and Medicine Lake and Mount Shasta, all these places that our people hold sacred, they're the last places that they're all earmarked for some company, some corporation to come in and do something to defile these sacred places. I think, fortunately, there are more and more ways, of course, through the internet and through films and radio programs like yours, people are getting the information, and we have to keep pushing for that. And for me, that's the other thing that happened when I was a little girl in the sweat lodge. The spirits said, oh, that she's lucky because she knows who she is. She's going to be a teacher. And I was a kid, and I was like, oh, no, because I pictured boarding school with desks and the teacher with the chalk at the board, and I was like, no, I don't want to be a teacher. But soon after, I realized what they meant, and that's being an educator in other ways, like with the radio program or doing the workshops or speeches or even just interacting with people in general. That's always been the bottom line, is that we protect just our way of being in the world, just teaching that much in the way we treat each other, the way that we tip the maid. A lot of times I'll do workshops, I'll say, well, tip your maids, or say thank you to the person cleaning. It's like we have to switch the way we think. That's the biggest problem, is Americans especially, and I've gone to other countries with Americans, and you can tell who the Americans are because they have this arrogance, you know, this entitlement that everything is for their disposal. And so switching the way we think, I think, is the basic and first and foremost. Even our own people that are traveling and stuff get into that little bit of arrogance. I've seen it. We need to remain humble. We need to every act we have, every decision we make. I mean, people waste water constantly. They waste, you know, the paper towels and napkins. I mean, just the way we think about things and conserving is our first step. The way we treat each other, the way we can gather our resources together, and let's all ride together instead of everyone taking their own car because they all want their own schedule. We need to really step back and look at how we live our daily lives, because ultimately that's what it boils down to. And so there is several organizations, United Indian Nations out of the Bay Area and other places. They just did a 40th anniversary of the takeover of Mount Rushmore honoring that they had there, you know, and Madonna was honored at that, as well as Lehman Brothers and other people. And so going and remembering some of those things and teaching about those things is important, because people have forgotten. I've been talking about the longest walk that just happened, and people, first of all, didn't hear about it. When I go across the country, no one knew about it. And then they didn't know that it happened 30 years ago either, in 78, which I was on that too. And so all of these things need to be out there. I think what we're doing by getting information out there is the first thing, but also pressuring these corporations. And luckily, I personally feel like we do have an ally now with Obama in the position that he is. I don't know if you saw the video footage of him with Native Nations. If you just go to YouTube and put First Americans Obama, there's video footage of at Crow Agency where he met with all these nations of people and of Native people and talked to our people. And he must have got adopted, because he said, now I'm one of the family and I'm not going to forget. And he talked about, he said, there's no way we can right the wrongs that happened in the past, but what we can do now is honor the treaties. So he said that. We have it on record. And this is something that people don't think about. The true concept of all my relations, of Midako Iase, of really thinking about that, is not just about us where we're sitting right now, but the whole concept of seven generations behind us, seven generations ahead of us. In our area where the Black Hills region is, the Hesapa, you know, the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty or the 1851 Treaty, those treaties were signed by our leaders not in the hopes that, oh, they're finally going to honor them. What they were signing them for was thinking seven generations from now, these liars who are lying to us in these treaties, they're going to have to deal with our descendants, who are going to be Native lawyers, Indian lawyers, and our descendants are going to need this piece of paper to fight for this, because they'll be able to fight in their courtrooms. That's brilliant thinking on our ancestors' part. And it's happening in the World Court with the Treaty Council and all the other ways that we have these treaties that we can stand. And not only are they going to save us, but they're saving the planet. I mean, that's ultimately what's happening. And other people need to realize that. They need to get behind supporting, honoring these treaties, because it is going to save the rainforests. It's going to save the things. And we have to band together and realize that our future generations are going to need that. We have to do it. It's our responsibility. In my workshop, I talked about there's no room for guilt. There's no place for blame. Those things, we need to turn it into something else. If you are looking at history and you feel guilty about what your ancestors did, or the decisions they made, or even in your family, your immediate family, decisions that are being made, we need to act to contradict those things and say, no, that those were mistakes, and we need to right those by doing the right thing and protecting this earth, protecting our Unchimaka, Grandmother Earth, listening to the wind. There was another film that was about wind itself and the wind generators that are going up, one on the Sichangu Reservation, the Rosebud Reservation, the fact that wind is forever and it's there, and how we can make these changes from the oil, petroleum-based mining, that the carbons that are polluting everything, using the wind and making that relationship with the wind, making that relationship with the water. That's, I think, one last thing I'd like to say is that every time we open a bottle of water, every time we turn on the faucet or flush, we waste so much water. And what we need to remember is our people, no matter where they lived, and I'll refer to mine in particular, I know we have a lot of stories among the women, and I've had that experience myself. When you go to the river in the mornings, the grandmother or the mother or the daughter, whoever, would go to the river with the buffalo bladders that carried the water to fill them up for the day and take them back to the teepee. They would go to the water and talk to the water and pray and say, uncle has a hip that hurts, or whatever's going on in the family. My mother's worried about this, or whatever that was in that prayer. And would talk to the water, and the water spirit would help us. And they would take it back, and the first thing in the morning, when they do that, they'd bring it back, and the family would circle together and take time in prayer to drink that first water. Not only did it bring the family together for that moment of prayer together, but it also honored the water so that we would always find it, that we would always have it, because on the plains there isn't a lot of water, so it was very sacred to us, like as it is to everybody. And we need to do that again. We need to, every time we open water, just say thank you and do what we can to organize to make sure that the salmon that are dying right now because they're irrigating fields that where they shouldn't be growing things, it's arid regions, let it be arid, they're irrigating those with the water that belongs to the salmon. So we need to stand up against those corporations that are doing those things and bond together and use this legislation, use the treaty rights, create new legislation that protects that water.
Lakota, my next question focuses on youth. As teachers, you and I have a perspective on the state of young people. This is an important topic because the youth are not only future leaders, they will also inherit our cultural traditions that hopefully they will pass on to their future generations. I try hard to encourage young people to be proud of themselves in whatever cultural heritage they come from. Wolf Mountain Radio features many interviews with young people to help get their voices heard. Yad Kiddushi Native Center networks with various youth organizations as mentors. I have met some very fine young people who do care about Mother Earth and who are working hard to create a better world. Within Indian country, there has been a growing revival of Native arts and culture reflected in the many powwows and events happening. There are also more and more tribal youth going to university, becoming leaders, and doing well in their chosen professions. All of these trends give me hope for the future. However, there remains many serious problems in Native American society that do affect children and youth. Alcoholism, drugs, dysfunctional family life, high dropout rates in education, lack of future employment, spousal abuse, per capita high incarceration, poverty, and intergenerational trauma from boarding schools, government termination, and relocation policies. This generation of Native youth also have less of a connection to traditional culture than we did. You and I at least had some elders to learn from. I also had the benefit of growing up in a rural reservation where I was taught farming, fishing, and hunting skills. Many Indian youth live in urban areas with little exposure to the land. Lastly, even though speaking one's native language and practicing traditional ceremonies were illegal until 1978's American Indian Religious Freedom Act, both were still practiced in secret as I grew up. I am worried that many Native youth are not able to know their Indian language or learn ceremony. These two aspects threaten our cultural survival as Indigenous peoples. Lakota, what are your thoughts about young people? How do you view this young generation?
First of all, yes, we have a handful of Native people who are expressing themselves through the arts or through rap or through whatever ways they find to express their anger, their rage, their pride, their love for the people, for their families. We have that on an amazing scale. It can turn everywhere. Again, on the internet, there's so many videos, and these young people who are really speaking out and using these many mediums to express that, it's a powerful generation. They're fed up, and I think that it's kind of a resurgence of what happened in the 70s. Again, it's rising up again. And so we have that. That's a powerful thing. And on the other hand, that's just a small percentage. Yeah. A huge percentage of our children, our young people, are the victims of and the result of the boarding school system, of invasion, of the Vietnam War, of all these things that happened generations ago that totally damaged our people. the incest in our communities because of the pedophiles and the sadists that ran the boarding schools generations ago, after generation, in raising our families to not know how to be parents. I mean, there was a period of time with my own kids, I had to talk to them and say, I don't know what to do right now. I'd have to tell them, as a mother, I don't know, because I wasn't with my mother during this time. So I don't know what to do. You know, we really get imprinted with what we learn, what we experience, so we parent the way our parents parented us. And unfortunately, a lot of that is brutal. A lot of that is out of ignorance because we didn't know any better. And what was considered discipline was survival. 4 or 5 generations ago, you had to be silent, you had to be quiet, or you would get beat to death or killed. And so that has come out in so many different ways and affected us in so many different ways. But nobody's naming that. Nobody talks about it. There's such a thick layer of shame, toxic shame, what they call it in the healing community, that people don't want to talk about things. They don't want to express that. And so it comes out in different ways. The even bigger problem is the fact that our children, our young people are going through this without the foundation that many of us had. Even though we went to boarding school, even though these things happened, we still had that intergenerational root. We had, everybody was grandma, everybody was uncle or auntie. We were grandchild to everybody. You know, people called us niece or nephew. We had those kinships, we had those strong roots. And our young people don't have that. I mean, I cry for my kids because I raised them out in the city, away from our family. My mother passed away from cancer. And I feel like we were sort of the limb that broke off the tree, and we're out there on our own. And they're even more disconnected. I still have that memory going back, but that generation is leaving us now. And I look at, what do my children have? What do my grandchildren now have? They're in the midst of the city, and they're learning what they call urban culture. Yeah, and so that becomes their culture, and it's a disconnect. So we have to reach out to all our young people across not just tribal communities, but all communities, to give them a root, to give them that sense of community. And we're really lucky at the same time in the Bay Area where I live, in Oakland, raised my kids there, and now they have people to turn to, people who watch them grow up, who are there to help them, that they can turn to, even though they're not our blood relatives. They're our Teochpa, yeah, they're our extended family, and so they do feel like they have that, those connections. It's not the same as the old ones, but it's a makeshift model, and we do what we can. But we need that. We need that in all communities. We need to be able to step up, and I think we've lost that in this generation where we didn't step up. Because when we were younger, our aunties and uncles did. They got in our faces, they got in our business, and that was part of the caring.
Yeah.
But we saw it as interfering or tearing us down or something. We need to get over that and realize it was guidance. And these kids are not someone else's kids. They're all of our kids. Yeah. And I do that all the time. I'll just tell somebody, you know, you need to open that door. You need to pick that up. You need to clean up after yourself. Who do you expect to do it? And they go, well, I didn't make that mess. I said, yeah, but this is your community. This is your table. And we have to bring them back in. We have to pull them, kicking and screaming, back in sometimes. But that's our responsibility, and to give them that sense of connectedness. And I think that's the disconnect. That's where we need to really focus on taking the time and making the effort, because we live in a culture, and it worked. The colonists, the people in charge, the multinationals, turned us into a consumerist culture where everyone buys their toys and then they sit with their toys. So people are sitting at home watching their HD TVs and on their computers. I'm guilty, I do the same thing. And we can just tune out everybody else. We have to turn those off and go to the community gatherings, go spend time with the young people, go create the womanhood ceremonies, the rites of passage ceremonies. Let's put our minds together. What are we going to do for these young men now that they're getting to be that age? We don't want them to turn to pornography or military video game. Let's take them out camping and let's show them the wind and the rain and the sun and the moon and the stars. Let's show them what our ancestors left for us. Let's pass that on to them. And we need to take time to do that.
Thank you.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our Yat Kedichi Native Center program identification was from Robert Tree Cody and Hovaya Edwards off their Kenyan Records CD entitled Reflections. The name of that song was Buffalo Prayer Song. I featured that song as an honor to today's special program guest, Lakota Hardin. The buffalo is a sacred relative to her Oseti Sakowan, the Great Sioux Nation, as is the moose, is a sacred relative to my Wabanaki people. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. I want to again sincerely thank Lakota for sharing her thoughts with us on honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous voices, as well as her dedication to defending Mother Earth and the well-being of all life now and for future generations. I want to remind everyone that KPFA's Bay Native Circle, the weekly American Indian radio show that is co-hosted by Lakota Hardin, Janine Antoine, Ross Kadi, and Greg McVicker, can be heard every Wednesday afternoon online at kpfa.org. We shall conclude today's broadcast with a special song from American Indian Movement co-founder and national field director Dennis Banks, entitled "We Are Still Here." Dennis gifted me his cassette years ago when Yadkidishi Native Center co-hosted his Bring Peltier Home national tour visit to Southwest Florida. Our brother Leonard Peltier still remains wrongly in prison, a victim of the U.S. Justice Department. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Until next week, be well. Aho, kinawantakwasin to all of our relations.
And so I say to America, I want you to remember our past. This past will give you direction for the future. Just as our people in our past, we are the spirit of the future. The spirit of this land lies rooted in the history of Native people. The massacres that happened to us, the army that came, took our land and killed our people, did not destroy our vision for a strong future. We are still strong, America. We never weaken. Like the spirit of Chief Joseph, we are still strong. Like the spirit of Geronimo, we are still strong. Like the spirit of Crazy Horse, we are still strong. America, we are strong people. Like the spirit of Peltier, we are strong today. As we were thousands of years ago, in the pages of history, we are strong. We were born strong. Our spirit is strong. We are still strong. We are still strong, America. Look about you and look at the Anishinaabe people. Look at the Lakota people, at the Dene people, pushed around again in this century, pushed off our land, trying to take yet what remaining area of land that we have left. But we will not lay down, America. We have never laid down in the face of struggle. We shall never abandon our past, nor shall we ever abandon the spirit of our people. Like the spirit of Chief Joseph, we are still strong. In the spirit of Geronimo, we are still strong. In the spirit of Crazy Horse, we are still strong. And all those who went before us, knowing that the seventh generation down the road would remember them, we are still strong, America. We are still strong, Anishinaabe people. And when we look at the Sac and Fox and the Winnebago, north to the Eskimos, south to the Cheyenne, and to the Arapaho, and to the Tulalip, to the Ojibwa people, we are strong. And I want every book about Native people to be truthful, to tell the truth of what our people did, to tell the truth of who we were, and that we never laid down. And I want the history books to remember us as being a strong people. We are strong. Mother Earth gives us that strength. Our grandmother, the moon, gives us that strength. Our oldest brother, the sun, gives us that strength. The four-legged, the deer, the buffalo, and the elk give us that strength. The winged thing, the eagle, the hawk, the owl, give us that strength. And as I look about this world in the four directions, I see the many colors of humankind. I see the many colors of people. And that's what makes us strong. That's what we believe in. That's our love. We are still strong. In the spirit of our people. In the spirit of our ancestors. Gone long ago. We are still strong. Just like an eagle flying high, a reminder to the four directors that we were born strong, we are strong, and when we leave this world to go to the spirit world, we will leave behind a culture and a tradition for the seventh generation. We will leave them the stories and songs of our people, of our struggle, of our ceremonies, and of our women. And when we leave them, we will know that they will be strong, still strong.